Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Welcome to the Sports Kings from Queens, where all the sports talk is royal, real, and straight from the boroughs. Today is Wednesday, November 5th. This is episode 203. I'm Gino, joined by my co-hosts, Darren and Kevin. As usual, catch us wherever you get your podcasts. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Give us a look, join our pages. We'd love to hear from you. If you got some questions or comments, send them to us. We'll get back to you. It's a football-heavy show tonight, guys. NFL about the midpoint of the year. College football in the home stretch, 4 weeks to go. We had some playoff stuff we're going to talk about. Let's get right into the NFL to start it off. So Jets were off. We're going to come back to the Jets in a couple minutes. Giants lost to the 49ers. That's our local news. They lost 34-24. San Francisco just handled the Giants. They dominated the line of scrimmage. Darren?
The only thing I'll say about this is 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, we were one quarter away from the Giants looking like they were turning the corner and might be competitive, and now they're running out the string. A bad fourth quarter in Denver, and it's over, and the loss of Scadaboo and everything else that goes along with it. But my goodness, how a team's fortunes, where a fan base was acting like they had everything right, and now all of a sudden it fell apart. They still have the quarterback, they believe, and I believe that too, actually. And I think that that was what propels them, but wow, what a difference like a month makes from where we thought the Giants were going to be to where the Giants ended up.
Okay. Headlines from last week. So Sam Darnold, he had a career-best performance through 4 touchdowns in the first half against my Commanders. Jane Daniels dislocated his elbow. He's going to be out a while. This is turning into the year from hell for my Commanders.
That was an ugly injury.
It was ugly. You know what? And honestly, we thought the Scadaboo injury was ugly. This is almost as bad as the Scadaboo injury.
And well, the Daniels you see so much clearer than the Scadaboo. I mean, that's why.
Well, maybe not. I mean, the Scadaboo, if you saw it, it was like that. So,
you know, any problem with him in the game that late?
Yeah, I do.
Because I didn't, but I understand why you would.
Listen, I do, but at the same time, if you're not going to play him so that he actually, I mean, he hasn't played, you know, it's not like
that was the reason why I didn't have a problem, because he hasn't played.
Yeah, he hasn't played. So
I always have the problem because he hasn't played. Why have him in there? He's already been injury prone this year. Get him out.
I thought they wanted to get him reps, but I understand what you're saying.
I could see it both ways, I have to tell you.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Bills beat the Chiefs. So they extended their regular season streak against Kansas City. This playoff seed repercussions from this. 28-21 was a score.
Yeah, right now the Chiefs are out of the playoffs, and the Bills are like the 5 seed. I don't think New England will hold them off, in my opinion. But, you know, right now that's the way it looks. I also think the Chiefs will find their way in. But at the same time, you know, Mahomes had his worst percentage passing ever. He threw for under 50% for the first time in his career. And they never looked comfortable, even though they always found a way to stay. They found a way to get back into the game. But Buffalo was the better team all night, I thought. I thought they were better.
I think comfortable is the right word, too.
Yep.
I honestly think that is the right word for that.
But I still think Kansas City, like you said, Darren, I think they're in good shape. Denver 7-2, but I still don't trust them. I still don't trust Bo Nix necessarily.
And I the Chargers,
Chargers 6-3, but with Slater and now all down for the season, they've got no offensive line. Herbert's going to get killed.
Yeah, the one thing I'll say against your trust, Gino, the only thing I'll say is, you know, Houston basically, and you're going to get to it, gave Denver that game. I mean, if Stroud doesn't get hurt, I don't think Denver wins it.
Yeah.
I mean, as good as Denver is defensively, their offense put up 15. Houston's defense is very good, but and we'll get into that. But
Denver, we'll get right into it now.
Yeah, jump in.
Denver beat the Texans 18-15. They had some fourth quarter magic again. A game winning field goal's time expired. Stroud goes down. Darren, go ahead.
Yeah, no, Stroud was playing well, and Houston's defense was playing real well. Houston controlled the ball a lot in this game. Denver had trouble moving it, but they settled and got field goals, but they got enough to win. I think that Houston is one of those teams where you're starting to see them play a little bit better. Then they lose Stroud, and you really can't trust Davis Mills. And at the same point in time, I don't think Nix looked really impressive, but when needed, he made huge scrambles and big throws. So there's a reason to trust him, like you're saying, Gino, and there's reason to doubt him because you're not going to get away with it against everybody playing like crap for three quarters and then being, you know, Captain America in the fourth. We got to see him a little bit more consistent right now.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, the hit on Stroud that knocked him out with a concussion, they threw the flag first. They picked it up. I thought it was the right call to pick it up. I thought it was a little bit of a late slide. I thought the defender was already coming in at him. He hit him in the chest, I thought, and his head hit the turf. That's what caused the concussion.
Yeah, he led with the shoulder, didn't lead with his helmet, hit him from the side. You know, I mean, these quarterbacks are going to run. You can't put a penny on them. They're going to get hit from time to time.
Jaguars beat the Raiders 30-29. I only bring it up because it was a wild overtime. But before the overtime, we had an NFL record-setting 68-yard field goal by Cam Little. I mean, we're getting to 70 at some point this year, I have to tell you guys. I don't know where, but it's coming. Darren?
Stupidest thing I heard from announcers all weekend, and I heard a lot of dumb things, was they were stunned that the Raiders were going for two. Why in the world would you play for a tie with no time left on the clock? Are you kidding me? Unless you're Tom Osborne in 81 against Miami in 84, whatever it was, why in the world would anyone play for a tie in the NFL? They're like, oh, they're going to go for two. Like it was some sort of ridiculously crazy move by Carroll. And how they don't go to Bowers is beyond me. But that's beside the point.
Vegas is 2-5. You go for the win there. If you're sitting there at 7-1 or 7-2, where a tie, you know, that half a game might mean a difference in division title. Maybe if you're that good, you go for the tie, just avoid the loss. But when you're 2-5, you go for the win. It was the right call to make.
Yeah, I didn't understand. I didn't understand them acting like it was a crazy, gutsy call. Anyway.
10 seconds left? Yeah. Come on.
I'll go through the rest of these pretty quick. So Ravens beat the Dolphins. Lamar's first game back from injury. Panthers knocked off the Packers 16-13. Last second field goal did it. Kev, what are you laughing at? Go ahead.
I wish I had bet that last week. I said that last week. I said that was a trap game for the Packers, and it turned out to be true.
And you were right on the button.
And the Packers looked unstoppable the week before against Pittsburgh. And you never know what you're going to see from Love next Monday against Philly. But and he did, they couldn't do anything against Carolina, who's an improved team. But let's not get crazy.
Yeah.
New England got they survived the late comeback by the Falcons. They moved to 7-2.
Missed extra point.
Yep.
Kick a cut.
Steelers handed the Colts their second loss. They forced six turnovers.
Where you been, Daniel Jones?
So some of them are fluky, but a little bit of hint of the old Daniel Jones coming out.
Just holding that ball a little too long, not getting off that first read fast enough. Gino talked about it for 3 years. Well, three years to us, two years on the podcast.
Vikings handed the Lions their third loss. It's a big win for the Vikings. I mean, they needed that.
They got it.
You know, they're back in this race here.
They were the better team.
They were.
Yeah. Detroit couldn't move the ball. They bullied Detroit in the lines, both lines.
The NFC North, you got 5-2-1 Green Bay, 5-3 Detroit, 5-3 Chicago, 4-4 Minnesota. We're halfway through, and this is anybody's division at this point.
What is that line for Caleb? You going to get to that game?
I'm going to get to that game in a minute. Chargers beat the Titans. Rams knocked off the Saints. Those are the other two games. And then we get to Bears-Bengals. So Bears win 47-42. Somehow they wind up winning this game. So you got three lead changes and three total touchdowns in the final 2 minutes. As the fourth quarter began in this game, the Bears were in control. They were up 41-27 to start the fourth. So they're up 14. With less than 5 minutes, they're up 14. And then the Bengals come back with this blistering 15-point comeback. It's an interception that gets called back. Then Flacco, who threw for over 470 yards in the game, he led them on this drive, hitting Fant for the touchdown, and then the 2-point conversion by Higgins. It's 41-35. You turn around. Then the Bengals do the onside kick, which how many times does that actually work nowadays? It works. They get the ball back.
It didn't even go 10 yards, but the Bears touched it.
Yeah, it hit one of the Bears.
Hit his foot.
Yeah. So the crowd's going crazy. Flacco marches the offense down. He hits Eusebius for a touchdown with 54 seconds left. Bengals are up 42-41. And the Chicago lead vanished in 89 seconds, Kev. That's all it took was the 89 seconds, and it's gone. Caleb's got 50 seconds. He's got no timeouts. And he leads them down. He scrambles. It's a 14-yard gain. The offense moves across the 40-yard line with 17 seconds left. He delivers a strike right down the seam to Colston Loveland. I don't know what the Bengal guys were actually trying to tackle him with. It wasn't their hands. That's for damn sure. He pinballed his way all the way to the end zone. It's a touchdown, 58-yard touchdown. Listen. They wound up winning 47-42, but it was chaos. I mean, this was chaos, Kev.
Yeah, I mean, Williams had the big day, 280 yards passing. He also caught two passes for 22 yards and a touchdown, rushed for 39 yards. DJ Moore had a rushing touchdown and a passing touchdown. No receiving touchdown.
The Bengals questioned and challenged a play to think it goes out of bounds, and they end up losing a touchdown rather than having the ball to one. You don't see that very often. No.
Caleb became the first player in NFL history with multiple passing touchdowns, multiple receptions, and a receiving TD, which is pretty crazy when you think about it. You look at his numbers. The only problem I have is the pass to Colston Loveland was ridiculous. How nobody tried to wound up tackling him was crazy.
Well, for the game, I saw the stat, 15 missed tackles by the Bengals for 133 extra yards.
And another stat for you, out of the top 10 players in the league with missed tackles, the Bengals have number 1, 2, 4, and 10. So it's not just this game. It's a team effort.
And one more stat, the Bengals are the first team since 1966 to lose back-to-back games when they scored 38 or more. According to ESPN, I was reading the article on ESPN, according to ESPN research, it was the second time since the 66 Jets that a team scored 38 or more and lost. So I went back and looked at the 66 Jets schedule, and I looked through it, and I went, they didn't lose back-to-back games scoring 38. So I go to AI, type it up. It was actually the 66 Giants. So you know what, ESPN? Don't give Jets any more credit for bad stats than we already have. We're a screwed franchise. We're a screwed fan base. Don't give us any more misery than we deserve. This was the Giants. Don't assume
that
New York stats are against the Jets. And the rest.
There we are.
Good job, Kev. All right, this week coming up, Colts and Falcons are in Berlin. Bucks-Patriots is probably a good game on the schedule.
Well, this is Tampa comes off the bye, gets a lot of guys didn't practice today, so we'll see what happens there.
Right.
And then New England coming off their first, you know, they won the game, but they probably shouldn't have against Atlanta. So we'll see how they bounce back.
We got Texans at the Jaguars. see if the Texans can give the Jags any trouble. The
Texans are a home dog great. Because of the Mills thing.
Yep. We got Rams at the 49ers. 49ers, by the way, have only played three home games. You know that?
Yeah, they go on a stretch now.
They have a ton of ridiculous. We got Chargers, Steelers Sunday night. We got Packers, Eagles Monday. Jets home for the Browns.
To me, the game of the weekend is Baltimore and Minnesota because Baltimore's a road favorite in this one. Minnesota coming off a really good game last week. Baltimore looked great. It was against Miami. I know everybody's expecting Baltimore now to just take over. Everybody thought Pittsburgh would lose to Indianapolis and they'd be a game out today. Didn't happen. There's still two games back. Not that they can't make that up. But now it's going to be, is J.J. McCarthy got something going, especially at home? Or is Lamar just going to come out possessed like it looked like he did last week? It's a really interesting matchup.
Yep. And you mentioned Miami. Just a real quick point. They fired their GM, Greer, last week after the game. Kept McDaniel for the rest of the year. I think he's dead man walking.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, any new GM is going to bring in their guy, you would think.
Yeah.
Unless they're in love with McDaniel, who's going to end up being a really good offensive coordinator somewhere. Most likely.
Yep.
All right.
He's like, what's his name?
North Turner?
No. New England offensive coordinator.
Oh, what's his face? The guy that loses everywhere he
McDaniel
goes.
McDaniel also, right?
Yeah, McDaniel also. McDaniel. That's right.
Josh McDaniel. Think, that's it.
I think Pitt and the Chargers also an interesting game this week. Just because Chargers have no offensive line and Pittsburgh can get to the quarterback. Chargers should be better. But, you know, you get Aaron Rodgers without weather. And, a Pittsburgh team that coming off their best game of the year, I think. They look kind of somewhat complete against a Charger team that controlled their game. They didn't cover it, but they controlled their game against the Titans. And Herbert, I don't know if you watch this guy run. He's like Thor out there, literally Thor, not like the Syndergaard version. He runs people over. He's just bigger and strong. I was watching some sort of interview once where when he was coming out, he was working out, and none of the other quarterbacks wanted to work out with him because he just looked that much more impressive than they did. And it was just kind of a funny thing. So that one should be fun. And obviously the Monday night game is, you know, a rematch of playoffs, Brazil, everything from last year with Philly and Green Bay, right, Jay? I mean, they actually got the games right this week a little bit with Pitt Chargers and Eagles Packers to end the week.
Yeah, it should be really good. I mean, the Sunday night, Monday night game should be excellent.
Especially now they'll start flexing in and out with where they need to.
They can't it's harder on the Mondays, but they can do it, right?
They can do it now on the Monday.
Yeah. All right. So yesterday was the NFL trade deadline. It delivered a flurry of trades. We had the Jets being the major story yesterday. Sauce Gardner gets traded. Quinn Williams gets traded. Listen, the haul they brought in is just absolutely, absolutely ridiculous. I don't know how the hell they pulled this off, but they wind up getting three first-round picks and a second-round pick. Kev, why don't you take it away, and we'll get into it a little bit.
Well, the Sauce one was absolutely.
That's crazy.
I mean, 4 years, $130 million in the offseason. Figures here for the long term. And honestly, the Colts made him the Godfather offer and said,
and that's it.
Two firsts and
Donnie
Mitchell, the wide receiver for Sauce. You know what? It's a no-brainer at that point. You have to make that trade. You hope it works as well from a draft pick perspective as – you know, very reminiscent of Jamal Adams for two firsts. And you hope the picks work the same way as that happened. And, you know, hate to see Sauce go, but there's a part of me that also says, you know, Aaron Glenn was an all-pro, Pro Bowl-type cornerback for a long time in the NFL. There's obviously something that he was comfortable enough to say, yeah, for this offer, we have to let him go.
Yeah, listen. To me, it's a no-brainer. I mean, the draft capital alone is just out of control. Darren.
Well, I mean, listen. And as a Jet fan, I become an apologist somewhat. Sauce has not been as effective in the last year and a half as he was in the first 2 years of his career. Now this year he was fine
to an extent
because they were picking on Brandon Stevens so much. You don't know. I mean, I think Sauce is having a good year. I'm not saying he's not one of the top five, top seven corners, top three maybe corners in the league. But I think they liked what they saw from Azarius Thomas. I think they thought that there was something there. And I also think that the fact is that they haven't paid him really a penny of that contract. It doesn't start till next year. So yeah. Basically, that $130 million, he's still on the rookie contract. The Jets really weren't on the hook for anything because they signed these guys, both him and Garrett, with their contracts not starting until their first year out. So they really do save a ton of cap money with this move.
Oh, absolutely.
The great thing is it was only about $13.5 million on the signing bonus. So when you prorate that or accelerate that into next year's cap, it's only $11 million in dead cap space.
Exactly.
For that huge of a contract.
It's nothing. It's literally nothing.
And then once you make that trade, I'm sure it's working in conjunction, Quinnen to the Cowboys for two this year or one next year, and Mazie Smith, another defensive tackle, young guy. I mean, his first-round pick a couple of years ago. Underperformed so far, but he's another young guy. You know what? You bring him in there, you see what you got in your system. And to me, you know, from everything you read now is that Quinnen had approached the Jets. He requested a trade. His preference was Dallas. Credit to Quinnen. It never leaked. He never came out publicly. It gave the Jets a chance to at least keep some leverage in the negotiations. And we're able to get a 2-1. And when you look at the, you know, like-for-like picks, you know, Dallas got two firsts for Micah Parsons and the turnaround trade of first and a second for Quinnen.
Yeah.
What did they do there?
Yeah, it makes no sense.
Quinnen Williams is a fine player. He's nowhere near the class of Micah Parsons.
Well, they also
they're different players, but the thing about it is that you what's your record if you're Dallas right now? What's your record?
3-5.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, what are you doing? I mean, you're not making a run.
Yeah.
Listen, can you easily finish second in the NFC East? You can. Can you pass some tiring horses? You can. But, Gino, you read the NFC North. Are all these teams going to collapse? Are they going to pass maybe one of the other teams, but not two of them? You know, Tampa Bay is playing really well. You never know if Atlanta kind of gets a resurgence. And out in the West, you got everybody good. And Arizona is better with Brissett than they are with Murray.
They are.
So you sit there and watch this team. I mean, what's the status of Trey McBride? Is four touchdowns with Brissett and two with Murray in 20-something games and four with Brissett in like three games? I mean, he actually utilizes the weapons. So when you go through it, I don't know why Dallas is jumping in unless Jerry's like, I'm getting old and I want to make a run. But it was – both holes were fantastic.
Well, and it's – that was going to exactly be my point, Darren, which is – if you're going to tell me that Indy was trying to pay a premium here because they are trying to make a run at, you know, with the record they have playing in the division, they, you know, they're at 7-2. I get it. Okay. If I told you that both of these trades went through and the Jets wound up getting a 26 first round pick in the deal for the Sauce and a 27 first round pick in the deal for Quinnen, you guys would have been fine without these second picks in these trades.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fact that you got another first, another second is just crazy stuff.
A young wide receiver and a young defensive tackle. Now, I'm not saying these guys are the answers because we don't know. But now I'm going to sit there and I don't have to see Alan Lazard anymore. I'm going to watch four young receivers run around and Garrett. Or three and Garrett and Tyler. You know, whatever.
That's good.
I want to see Mitchell. I want to see Mechie out there both, you know. Let's see what they got.
I want to see Arian Smith, and I want to see these kids play. Let them play, and let's see who belongs and who doesn't. And Mazie, to be honest, listen, I love Quinnen Williams. He's a great Jet. The problem with Quinnen was that there were a lot of games where he didn't show up. And it's not that he's not – he's getting double-teamed. I get it. But he wasn't making a difference on the interior. You saw the Bengals run it down our throat in the last game. He wasn't making a difference. We have enough guys in rotation that'll fill in. No one's going to push the pocket like Quinnen does a few times a game. None of them are that talented. But what it's going to do is going to give these young guys a chance to see what we have, free up a ton of cap space. And what the Jets basically sold us is don't worry about this year, celebrate in April. Now, Does that sound dumb? Of course it sounds dumb. But when you're a Jet fan, now I have something to look forward to in the offseason because my season was already gone anyway.
You're 1-7 with them? What's the difference going to be? And for this year, whether they have the first pick or the second pick, you know, do they love one of the quarterbacks? If not, you know, you trade down, you get some more draft capital, and you look at 27 for the draft and just to build the team so that the quarterback can come in, hopefully, whether it's a rookie in 27 or if he makes some of these big picks for a veteran, you want everything in place for the quarterback.
Yeah. So I get the Colts doing it because they're trying to make a run. I don't get it all. I don't get it at all. I don't know why you pay the premium at this point for this when you're 3-5-1 and you're behind. And Darren talked about it, a slew of teams.
Yep.
Okay, it's not like you're behind one team. You're behind a slew of teams. Okay, you don't have any tiebreakers. You have nothing in this.
You lost a tiebreaker to Arizona the other night.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, for the Colts, you know, they're in contention for a one seed by home field throughout. Yeah. And if Sauce Gardner is going to make the difference, if you get into the Super Bowl, you know, teaming with Ward on the other side when Ward comes back healthy and winning the Super Bowl, guess what? When those first round picks come around the next 2 years, you look at your Super Bowl ring and you go, yeah, it was worth it.
And Kev, let's be honest, you have no idea what Daniel Jones is going to be next year.
Right.
Right now,
you don't even know if he's going to be a Colt, you know? He's not signed.
Agreed. So here's my point, right? I don't think NFL teams get aggressive enough at the deadline. And this is where I think a lot of the other sports get it right with the trades. I know you need trade partners, so it's not a one-way street. You got to have somebody else to cooperate with you. But if you're getting close to competing, you got to try to go make a trade or two to get there because you don't know if you're going to have another chance. Listen, Washington's the easy example. I thought maybe we would get to 10, 11 wins this year. Jaden hasn't been healthy all year. There's no way I'm winning. Okay. Buffalo needed a wide receiver. New England needed a wide receiver. Kansas City needed a running back. I'm just giving you big ones. Green Bay just lost Tucker Kraft. They need a tight end. They did nothing. Okay. And the bad teams are just a bigger problem as anything else because you can rebuild a team quickly. If you're smart by trading players, you get cap space, you get picks. You know, the Jets, Miami, Cleveland, Tennessee, Vegas, the Giants, New Orleans, they did basically nothing. The only one is the Jets that did some of this. Now, here's the only question I have for you guys, and that is, it was out on Twitter, so I saw it, that the Jets were asking for a third-round pick for Breece. And apparently the offer from Kansas City was a fourth. Now, I can't confirm this. This is what was on Twitter.
I read the same thing.
Okay. If it's true, why the hell is that trade not made?
The only thing you could do right now is you re-sign Breece.
Franchise him at the very worst.
I would actually prefer to sign him so he's happy and not franchise him so he's not playing on a one-year thing. But right now, if that's the case, you say, Breece, we love you. Do the same thing you did with Garrett last year and with Sauce last year, and we want you to be our guy. Yep. And you give him the $16 million a year for four or whatever it is. Okay. You make it front heavy. It's the only thing you can really do. The other guys, Jermaine Johnson, same thing. Jermaine said all the great things. I'm sick that they're gone, but I'm happy I'm here. Great. Now I want you to be here. I'm going to give you money too right now. And I sit there and I shore up these guys because I just freed up all this cap space. So why not? Shore them up. I'm still going to have plenty of room on the cap to do what I want to do.
Yep.
And when you look at the Jets – And listen, I know I'm rose-colored glasses. I get it. But when you look at the Jets, there's no quarterback, right? If you do keep Breece and you do keep Garrett, and from what we've seen from Mason Taylor so far, you feel like you have a little bit. You have two bookend tackles. Are they going to be great? We have no idea yet. But they're young. So you're going to give them a shot. They're both first-round picks.
I mean, the O-line's been solid this year.
Hasn't been great because I don't love the center. If we would have had a Veris center, I'd feel much better. But it's been fine. I agree with you. So when you look at the offense, if you can find the right guy, the right signal caller, and don't come out and get me Kyler Murray because I'll lose my mind. Draft somebody and let's see what we can do. But you have pieces in place, especially if you keep Breece. If they decide for some strange reason to trade Breece in the offseason, you know, sign him and trade him or whatever it is, then that means they're going to go with Braylon Allen and Davis. I can live with it, but I'd rather try to keep Reese if that's what you're going to do. On the defensive side, you know, you got some question marks. You kept your two ends. You got a bunch of tackles. You got to see if any of them pan out. You got to hope the cornerbacks pan out, and you're going to be drafting people. You're going to have four picks most likely next year in the top 50. I mean, so, you know, you feel pretty good about it. We'll see what happens.
And I said that because most of these teams don't make trades. Now, we did have a couple yesterday. Cowboys also brought in Logan Wilson. Don't know what the hell that does for them.
He's trying to stop the run and win. But, again, he's 3-5.
Seahawks, they traded for Rashid Shaheed, another weapon to give Darnold at wide receiver. Jaguars traded. They brought in Jacoby Myers. And
that was a smart move for them with Travis Hunter getting hurt. I thought it was a smart move.
It was. Yep. And then, especially with Travis Hunter going down. And then you got the Eagles, the only team that made these trades to try to make themselves better. They made the trade with the Jets for Michael Carter. They brought in Jaire Alexander from the Ravens, and then they brought in Jalen Phillips from the Dolphins. So at least I thought they were trying to, you know, shore up some of their needs.
Howie Roseman did a great job. Better. He did.
You know? Yeah, listen. All right. Any other NFL points before we move on, guys?
No, I mean, we touched on the all the injuries. No, I think we're good. I think we're ready to go. Jets versus Browns this week. Game everybody's looking forward to watching.
That I read a thing. That was flexed to 4 a.m. on Tubi TV.
They're playing that game in Nova Scotia in front of no crowd.
All right. Gino's got his Kings Ransom bets for this week.
Let's go for it, brother.
I got three bets. I'm on this 6-point tease, by the way. So my first three-team parlay is Seattle, Chicago, and Buffalo money line on a 6-point tease. I'm sorry, not money line, 6-point tease. So we get Seattle minus a half a point, Chicago plus 1.5, and Buffalo minus 3.5. That's a plus 140. My second one, I missed on this last week. We're going to try this one again. It's plus 800. Baltimore minus 4.5, Lamar a TD, Henry a TD. It didn't hit last week, so the odds went up, actually. Now it's a plus 800. And then my third one is going to be a three-team money line parlay. Pay 649. It is New England on the money line, the Rams on the money line, and Pittsburgh on the money line. And those are my King's Ransom bets for week 10 of the NFL season, guys.
All right.
We're going to move to college football. We got some stuff to talk about.
Here we are. 4 weeks left, G. 4 weeks. That's it. And the regular season, I should say, anyway, before we get to the conference championship games and all the things that go on with college football. We have more SEC coaches getting fired. Hugh Freeze goes down this week.
Yeah.
So we have another one. This week. It's a league where they're fired. Everybody, Dabo somehow keeps his job in Clemson. He said, I think I'm going to get fired, but he didn't yet. But, you know, a lot going on in these conferences. Let's start with the SEC. Let's start with the big dog, okay?
Yep.
Tennessee says bye-bye. They're done. They lose. They're out. They lose at home to Oklahoma. They haven't had a good win all season. Haven't beat anybody ranked.
Right.
So they're done.
Lose or leave town matchup with Oklahoma. They lost. They're done.
They're done. Vandy goes from looking pretty strong to having to win out now, okay? They have their second loss, and they end at Tennessee. So that, even though Tennessee's out, that's a rivalry matchup. The other matchups are home for Auburn and Kentucky, games that are winnable. They're going to have to win that last game, Kev.
They're going to have to, even
being consideration. Oklahoma has to stay alive with the win over Tennessee. They do that. Now they also need to win out, but they have to go to Bama, and then they play Missouri and LSU. So they have to win at Alabama to keep their dream alive, Kev.
Yeah, and right now, you know, we can talk about it a little bit. They were 12th in the poll that came out, or the playoff rankings that came out Tuesday night.
A little high, in my opinion.
You know, I didn't have a big problem.
Because you're an SEC biased guy, but an average person would say it's high.
But like you said, Darren, that game at Alabama is going to determine their season.
If they win that Alabama game, the other two games are winnable. Texas stayed alive with the win against Vandy. And you know what? That was a bad freaking beat because I got a push. And I should have won that game easy. They gave him a 2-point conversion that was not even close. I mean, it was like, what are you? And they reviewed it and they kept it. And, you know, they just let Pavia run down the field in the fourth quarter. But Texas was the much better team against Vandy last week. Now they have to win out, and they go to Georgia.
Yep.
Then they get Arkansas, and then they host A&M in that freaking battle at the end of the year, that huge matchup there. So they have to win out. I mean, listen, if any conference gets one team with a three losses, it might be the SEC, but they're going to need a lot of help to do that, Kev.
Yeah, I mean, you look at last year, three losses, they were still pretty clearly in. I think this year, when you look at the whole landscape, three losses is going to be real tough to get in this year because there's a lot of teams right now with one losses, zero or one loss in the top.
Exactly. Wow. Then you get Missouri, all right? They need to win out. They're barely on life support. They have A&M, then they play Mississippi State. Then they go to Oklahoma and go to Arkansas. They have to win all four of these games, and they're playing with a true freshman quarterback that was third string to start the year in Zala. So they lost Prabula, which really killed them.
And no good wins yet so far. So
they gave Alabama all they can handle, and they probably should have beaten Vandy. But they lost both of those games, you know. So that's what happens. Ole Miss has a little bit of breathing room. I think Ole Miss is pretty safe in our opinion. They still have Citadel, Florida, and then they play at Mississippi State. Hard to imagine them losing any of them. If they lost one, it'd be a miracle, in my opinion.
Yeah,
at Mississippi State because it's the Egg Bowl, and you never know what happens with the cowbell.
Yeah, they're sixth right now, so they've got the wiggle room. You know, we'll talk about it overall, but you know, we really want to be inside the top 10 this year,
no doubt.
And like you said, they got a little bit of wiggle room, but there's no reason at all they shouldn't run the table and be 11-1.
So then we get to Georgia, right? They're five, right? So they have to go to Mississippi State this week. Then they play Texas at home, Charlotte, and then they go to Georgia Tech, but not at Tech. Tech took the money and played the game in Atlanta, so they take away that home field advantage, which is kind of dumb. But you know, Georgia in good shape, and they have the win over Ole Miss. So you almost feel like even if they slip up a little bit, Georgia should be safe.
Yeah, again, as long as the records is the same, Georgia stays ahead of Ole Miss because of that win.
Sell that to Miami and Notre Dame when we get to it.
Yep.
Alabama, in great shape. They're undefeated in conference, okay? And they've actually beaten Georgia, they beat Missouri, and they beat Vandy. So they've beaten good teams, right?
And Tennessee, which I think is still –
Yeah, they've fallen out, but I'll give you that. You're right. I mean, I was going with the two-loss teams, but you're right. Yep. Another good win there. And they beat them by 17. They have LSU, Oklahoma, Eastern Illinois, and then they play the Iron Bowl at Auburn. They should be fine.
Yep. Again, one loss there. As long as it's not to Eastern Illinois, they should be fine, even with one more loss.
And then A&M has probably the most wiggle room. They have no losses, right? So they're undefeated. Yep. And they have the win at Notre Dame, which kind of helps. And you know now they go to Missouri, which is never easy. South Carolina, Samford. And then they go to Texas to end the season. So – when you look at this right now, the four teams seem safe. I don't know if they get a fifth. Everybody has a tough road to run the table. Maybe the best chance out of everybody running the table is Vandy. Do they leapfrog everybody with their best win being Tennessee?
If they win now, they can leapfrog Texas and Oklahoma, even though they lost to Texas. You know, Texas has the advantage. They've beaten both Oklahoma and Vanderbilt right behind them.
They got to go to Georgia, though.
But they do go to Georgia, and they still play Texas A&M. It's at home, but still two tough games there. Vandy does have a chance here. But, again, getting back into the top 10 is going to be tough.
I agree. So the SEC, and we're going to get into the rankings as we go, but there's four teams that we feel pretty good about, correct?
Yep, I think so. I agree.
Okay, the Big Ten, we say bye-bye to Illinois, who's been a fake team all season. But, you know, getting blown out last week just knocks them out. To me, Michigan, Washington, USC all have two losses, as does Iowa, and they're all on the outside losing in. But I mean, put Iowa in a different spot than I put the other three teams, in my opinion.
To me, the four of them are all between 19 and 23 in the rankings.
I think Iowa's like, you know, seeded, though.
The College Football Playoff Committee decided, let's just throw the ball in there. It felt like, you know, and we'll just flip a coin to rank them. But it's clearly, I think it's a top three, and nobody else has even a chance.
Well, I think Iowa's got a shot, and I'm going to tell you why.
Why?
They got two losses. They lost the Cy-Hawk classes to the Classic 16-13 to by three. It was 16-13 to Iowa State, and then they lost 20-15 to Indiana.
Nobody has
played Indiana well at all. Indiana's blown everybody out. They kept them to five. It was really seven. They took the late safety. Remember, we got all the seven. About the spread was 6.5, something like that. If Iowa beats Oregon this week in Iowa City,
in Iowa, Yep.
That flips. Because now Oregon doesn't have a good win. Because do you call Penn State a good win right now?
At the time, it was a good win. But right now, no, you can't say it.
And now when you look at it, Iowa still has to go to USC, Nebraska, and they host Michigan State after this Oregon game.
Three winnable games.
Three winnable games. I mean, at USC will be tough.
It's going to be tough, yeah.
And Nebraska lost their quarterback, Raiola, for the season. So it makes it a little easier. Oregon lost to Indiana, only loss they have. They have to go to Iowa. They play Minnesota and USC at home, and then they go to Washington, which has been a house of horrors for Oregon.
Lack of a good win, though.
They don't have one. Penn State's a good win.
Yes, they have. And, you know, with the way they've fallen off.
If Iowa beats Oregon, Oregon's out. And Iowa could play themselves in my opinion. Yep. Doesn't mean it will happen that way, but it could. I think everybody else needs miracles.
I think
they're not better than the SEC schools.
If Iowa beats Oregon, now you're looking at Iowa maybe moving up to 14, Oregon dropping to 15 type, but it gets Iowa ahead of Oregon, at least in the pecking order there.
And again, when you remember this, Iowa has no good wins either. So it's not like we're talking about Iowa being great. But if they beat Oregon this week, it's a different animal, which was unfathomable a couple weeks ago. ACC, okay? So Virginia has one loss to NC State, but it didn't count as a conference loss. So they're the undefeated team, and they're the highest seed. But they were like 14, I think, right?
Yeah, they were 14.
So this
is not a team that has a good win anywhere, right? They end the season with Wake, at Duke, and Va Tech. So only tough game is at Duke. And it's not amazingly tough, but it's tough enough for the ACC. If they sweep that, they're going to be in the ACC title game with a real shot.
Yep.
Georgia Tech couldn't stop the run last week, and NC State with a backup running back ran it down their freaking throat. Haynes King played great. It wasn't him. Always. Yeah, he's a fun guy to watch, but Georgia Tech fell from undefeated, so now we have to beat Georgia in the last game of the season to get in.
Yeah.
And we gave up the home field advantage, you know, because we wanted the cash from the Mercedes-Benz Dome there, whatever it is.
Not only Georgia, they're home, but they still got Pitt, which is still going to be a tough game.
It is a tough game. Pitt's been playing real well. They actually and Pitt has Notre Dame, Georgia Tech, Miami. They're going to affect all three of these teams.
And Tech's only, if you want to call it a good win, was Clemson.
And we've seen what Clemson's done. It goes in the same boat as Oregon.
Yep, exactly.
You know, they beat Clemson. They won at Duke, which at the time seemed like a good win, but now that doesn't look as good. Louisville's the team that's most interesting. They beat James Madison, which I know doesn't mean anything to anybody, but James Madison is damn good. They beat Miami. They beat Pitt.
On the road, right?
Yeah. Their loss was at home against Virginia.
Yeah.
Lost by seven, I think, in that game. And they have Clemson, and they have to go to SMU, and then they end the game with the Commonwealth game against Kentucky. So this schedule, that's not an easy game. It's home, though, against Kentucky, but none of these games are that easy. So Louisville is a team that's fighting to get that second spot.
Again, winnable games. They're going to be in each of these four games. The spread should be pretty close in these games, but Louisville does have a chance of running the table.
So Miami looked great. They beat South Florida. They beat Notre Dame. Now they lose two in a row, basically, or two or three. I'm not sure. But they lose at SMU, and obviously they lost at home to Louisville. So now where are they? But if Miami wins out, they're 18 and Notre Dame's 10. They beat Notre Dame.
Doesn't make sense how they're so far apart.
Even though I think Notre Dame's better, I go if you go by the eye test, the Irish are the better team.
Eye test
shouldn't be 8. It shouldn't be 8. If you wanted to do Notre Dame 10 and Miami 12, or Notre Dame 12 and Miami 14, I can see it. But 10 and 18 seems a little extreme, Kev.
I mean that loss was week one.
Yep. Lucky, and it counts for a little less.
I know they look at the body of work, but yeah, I mean, losing week one to Miami is a lot different than losing last week to Miami, but Miami still has that win. They should be separated by 2-3, not 8.
But, okay, so here's where I jump in, though. But what that means, if you're going by the rankings, is that they're going to jump over three other ACC teams. Because they're at 18 right now. Georgia Tech's at 17. Louisville's at 15. Virginia's at 14. So if you move them all the way up, you're telling me they're the
top. I would actually slide Notre Dame down. I would have moved them up.
Okay.
That's Notre Dame. Tell me Notre Dame's going to win. USC?
USC.
And it wasn't at USC. It was home. And USC kind of blew that game by trying to do a wide receiver pass. If it was at USC, it's in November. It's the only reason I remember.
That's right. And yeah, you're right.
South Bend is in October.
I have it typed down wrong here.
But the fact is that they should be down further, in my opinion.
Okay, but then here's the question, right? So you got those four ACC teams in the rankings right there between 14 and 18. Then where do you put Notre Dame in between there?
I probably am somewhere around 14, 15.
Okay.
I probably don't have them at 10.
You still may not have Miami ahead of them, though.
No, I don't know if I have them ahead because Miami's been bad the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they still beat them.
Notre Dame's playing better right now than Miami.
And here's the problem. If Miami keeps losing, it only hurts Notre Dame. Notre Dame needs Texas A&M to keep winning, and they need Miami to keep winning.
We know why Notre Dame's ranked 10th.
It's Notre Dame. And you know what? It's more fun when Notre Dame's in it. It's like saying the baseball's better when the Yankees aren't in it. It's better when the Yankees are in it. Just now it's the Dodgers because that's the new team. But anyway, then we get to the finale here. We get to Big 12, okay? And before the American, before the smaller conference.
Yep.
Okay, so Cincinnati, they got blown out last week. The spread was right. We were all wrong.
Yeah.
Right? We were like, how could it be? How could it be?
How could it be double digits?
If you watch the game, that it wasn't even close. 10-15 start. There I was. I'll watch a quarter. I watched a half, actually. Whoa. So Cincinnati in trouble. Houston blows a game to West Virginia. Done. TCU, they got two losses. No good wins.
Nope.
Life support. Utah, two losses to the two teams ahead of them. They get the 13, Kev. I thought that was a little bit higher than I expected them to be.
Yeah, I thought so too, because especially since BYU and Texas Tech were only 7-8, to me, you know, if one of them was a little bit higher, you know, if one of them was, you know, let's say BYU being undefeated, if they were decided there was four or three, then that's a really great win. Still a great win, but not really great. You know, you're splitting hairs here, but I think, Utah's just a pinch higher. And, you know, they could be one of the ones that slid down a little bit too.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Utah got blown out 34-10 at home to Texas Tech. It wasn't like they lost a three-point game like they did to BYU on the road. They lost at home by 24. So that's where I had problem with the seeding. But these are the only three teams that are really alive. I mean, to me, Utah stays alive, and their ranking was higher than I expected. But you know what? BYU coming up now, okay? They go to Texas Tech this week, which is the game of the week, okay? Then they play TCU, which is still pretty good. They have to go to Cincinnati, and then they host UCF. If they lose two of these games, they could fall out of this.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, you know, their best win would be Utah. Same thing with Texas Tech. They lose this week. They already lost to Arizona State. They have BYU, obviously. Then they have UCF at home, and then they go to West Virginia. So they don't have a tough schedule on top of that. But Texas Tech, I don't know if they can afford a second loss here. I think they have to win this game.
I think they have to win this game, have both teams have one conference loss, and set it up so that BYU-Texas Tech meet up in the conference final. I think that's the way for the Big 12 to get two teams in here.
So when I talked about it in the beginning of the year, I thought that the ACC would get two and the Big 12 would get one. Now I'm the other way.
That's kind of flipped
around. I think it goes the other way, guys. Now the American, just because it's fun. And then we'll get this done and wrapped up for you, Gino. So Navy loses at Tulane. So now Navy has to run the table. They only have Notre Dame on the road, Memphis on the road, USF and Army. There's no way they run the table. They're done.
Easy.
There's not one easy game on the schedule. The easiest game is Army, and that's not easy.
And that's it. That's sort of after the season, after the final rankings are released, isn't it?
Yeah. It is after the season, but I mean but they should have two losses before that
point,
you would think. If you go with North Texas, they have one loss. It was a blowout loss at home to USF, who has two losses. So North Texas needs a lot. They don't play anybody tough. They have at UAB, at Rice and Temple, but we'll see what happens. USF has two losses. And in the beginning of the year, it looked good when they beat Boise State and Florida, but both of those teams don't look that good right now.
Yep.
They lost to Miami and Memphis. They should have won the Memphis game. They kind of gave it away. They go to Navy, UAB, and Rice. So all three of these teams, to me, are in trouble. Tulane has two losses at Ole Miss, and they got blown out by Texas San Antonio. If it was another team, you could sit there and say, I'll keep Tulane around.
Yeah,
but Texas A&M and San Antonio beat them by 20.
22.
They beat Duke and they beat Northwestern. These are good quality wins for a team from the American. And get blown out by Ole Miss, you can live with it. But the UTSA loss kills them, which really leaves Memphis as the team that you can only – that you kind of look at to try to get through. They beat USF. They beat Arkansas. Not that it's a good SEC team, but they still beat an SEC team. They have Tulane left. They go to East Carolina, tougher than you think, and then they play Navy. So right now, to me, Memphis is the front runner for that 12 spot. Agreed?
Agreed.
Agreed.
Especially when you look at the other ways it worked out. You know, North Texas beat Navy.
Yep.
Navy's
beat them by 14. It wasn't even really that close.
USF's beaten UNT.
Mm-hmm. By 27.
And Memphis beat USF.
Yep.
So when you put all those together, Memphis clearly – not clearly, but no, they are the favorite right now for that group of five bid.
Now, just to go through the other teams real quick, okay? Notre Dame, they have the 10 right now, so they're in. Lost their first two. They lost to Miami and lost at home to A&M.
Yep.
Combined by 4 points. It wasn't like they were blown out in any of these games. They need both Miami to keep winning and Texas A&M to keep winning to make that resume look better.
Yep.
They have,
and let's face it, Navy at Pitt, Syracuse, Stanford.
At Pitt's the only game that's left.
Yeah, I mean, if Notre Dame's sitting there at 10-2, they're in.
They're most likely going to get in. It'd be hard to surprise. To take them away. Their big wins though are Arkansas on the road by big, where they got the coach fired. Pittman got fired. Beat Boise State, which looked good early. We all thought that they were a team that was going to be up there. They got knocked out, and they beat NC State, who has beaten other teams. So it's actually a good win, but no consistency from NC State. James Madison, just an interesting team to bring up. 7-1, only loss was at Louisville. They led 14-6 in this game in the third. They lost 28-14. They were in it. The only tough game left they have is really Wazoo. And they have Coastal Carolina at the end, which is somewhat challenging too. But that's what they have. But if James Madison runs the table and Memphis loses one more, could they get that 12th spot? No great wins.
Yeah.
Their only loss would be at Louisville by 14. Something to look at. The other team is San Diego State, who was not picked to be this high. Their only loss was a blowout to Wazoo. They got blown out by Washington State.
They did.
They lost that game badly. They've given up 80 points in 8 games, 10 points a game. Out of those 80 points, 60 of them were over 2 games. They give up 36 to Washington State and 24 to Colorado State. So the other 6 games they played, they've given up 20 points. Their defense has been outstanding. They have no good wins either. But if they win out, James Madison happens to slip up, and Memphis loses a third game, do they have a chance of getting the last spot?
I mean, these are conference champions. With the conference championship win, they'd both be 12. Either one would be 12-1.
Yep.
And you got to compare that against, you know, whoever wins the American. If it's Memphis right now, if Memphis wins out, of course they're in. But if they slip up, you know, now it becomes even more open.
I'm just saying there's a lot to go into with this. So
yep.
That's where we kind of are. This week, a couple of big games. Oh, I'm sorry, G, go ahead.
So I was reading about how the committee that does the selection is using the new record strength metric. And I wanted to hear what you guys had to say. So I'll just give you the rundown. So apparently they're placing greater emphasis on wins over quality opponents this season while minimizing the reward for beating teams with sub 500 records. And it's designed to go beyond overall records, provide deeper reasoning where teams are slotted and why. So essentially, record strength is how well an average top 25 team plays against their schedule compared to the other teams. Are you guys good with this?
Texas is 11 and Oklahoma is 12.
Right. And are you guys good with this? Because
it's better. It's better.
From what I read, why is the NCAA basketball not doing this as well? Because
that's a great point, and you're 100% right.
This is exactly what we always complain about, basically, is that if you don't do any kind of comparison against similar teams, you're never going to come up with anything.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Yep.
So this week, just a few features just to bring up, and then we'll move on from college, okay? So Iowa at Oregon, we talked about it a little bit. Oregon 6.5-point favorite on the road at Iowa. It's a big game, okay? We have Missouri at hosting Texas A&M. A&M a 6.5-point favorite at Missouri. Big game for both teams to stay alive. Navy, Notre Dame, just got to mention it because it's Navy, Notre Dame. Both teams, either team loses, they're out. That's that one. And then the big one, Gino. Oh, high noon. Because why not in Texas? Jones AT&T Stadium. Beautiful Lubbock, Texas, where Gino's been many times. ABC is the network. We get the eighth seed, the Cougars of BYU. They come into Lubbock undefeated, one of four undefeated teams in the country, G. And they take on the seven-seeded Texas Tech Red Raiders. Red Raiders are right now a favorite of 10. Started at 9.5, moved up to 10 last I saw, over under 52.5. G, what are you thinking? Who you like?
All right, so Texas Tech plays some dominant football when Baron Morton starts. They haven't played a game within 20 points when Morton has started, but this is basically a win or miss. It's either a win or you miss the Big 12 championship at this point for Texas Tech. I'm going to take the Raiders at home. Give me Texas Tech minus the points. Maybe, 34-20, 14 points. Kev, what do you think?
Yeah, Texas Tech is better. They're playing at home, but I'm all in on Bear Brockmeyer. Brockmeyer. This kid's so fun to watch. He's my second favorite quarterback to watch right behind Haynes King. Do I think Texas Tech is going to win? Probably. But do I see it being double digits? No. I think BYU is going to give him a hell of a run here. This is going to be close. It's going to be right down to the final 2 minutes. It's going to be up in the air. So give me the BYU plus a 10.
Okay.
I'm going to break the tie with Tech. I think Texas Tech kind of wins this game. I think they've been really good when Morton plays. I think that they run – both teams run the ball great. They really do. I think Texas Tech is a little bit more versatile than BYU is. And I also think that Texas Tech is a little better stopping the run. They're number one in the country. So I'd say a lot better at stopping the run than BYU is. I'm going to take Texas Tech. I'm going to say it's 31-10, 34-10 type of game. But I hope it's as close as Kevin wants it to be, because I think that would be a fun game to watch. Gee, why don't you give us your next one?
All right. My next one is I'm taking Indiana at Penn State minus 14.5. Nittany Lions have lost five straight. Mendoza is one of the Heisman front runners for a reason. I think he has a big day. And I got news for you. If the name Penn State wasn't in this equation, I think this spread is 17 or 20. I like this personally to bet. Give me Indiana. I think they win by at least 20. I'll take Indiana minus the 14.5. Kev?
I'm going down under the lights down in Tuscaloosa. This game is Alabama's favored by 10.5. LSU's without Nussmeier. Of course, they fired Kelly. They're in a mess right now. Give me Alabama. I'll lay the points. I think Alabama wins this by 3 touchdowns.
I like it.
I'm going to mention a game that I mentioned earlier. I'm taking Iowa plus the 6.5 against Oregon. I don't know if they're going to win, but I think it's going to be a field goal game one way or the other. I think Iowa's defense is really, really good. I'm going to take Iowa. I'm going to say Iowa does win it. I'm going to say Iowa wins this game 23-20. G,
all right, my last one. I rarely take huge spreads. I'm taking one. Ohio State is at Purdue. It's minus 29.5. This has got blowout city written all over it. Give me Ohio State. I think they win this by 40. 48-10, maybe. I could see this. I could see them breaking 50. Give me Ohio State minus the huge points. Kev?
I'm torn between two games. Both of them have 6.5-point spreads. I like A&M given the 6.5 at Missouri, but I'm afraid of Missouri playing at home. This is a desperation game for them. Vandy, I think, needs a big comeback here, bounce back win. They're playing Auburn at home. Give me Vandy minus 6.5 at home against Auburn.
All right, I kind of like A&M too. I'm going to go with a game that's a little off the board. I'm going to take Kentucky getting 3 at home against Florida under the lights in Lexington. I think it's a tough place to play. They played under the lights last week and won in Auburn. Let's see if they keep that momentum going. Florida's in a little bit of disarray. I'm going to take the Kentucky Wildcats, and that's our college picks for this week. G?
All right, so before we move on, I got a fourth bonus game for you because we brought up all this Memphis talk, and they play Friday night. Tulane is at Memphis. Memphis minus 5.5. Memphis averages 38 points a game. Tulane averages 25 points a game. The point differentials are ridiculous. Tulane is plus 3. Memphis is plus 166. Tulane's coming off the huge bad loss. We talked about it. I think Memphis blows them out. Minus 5.5 to me is an easy pick. This could get wild, I think. 38-17, 38-10. Give me Memphis in a fourth bonus pick for Gino.
All right. Love it, G. Love it. Okay, cool.
All right. Well, yeah. One other college football note.
Yep.
Really local for me, Army. You know, they're about 20 minutes from my house. They played Air Force this week. This was a 10-10 game after three. Army, typical Army drive, 13 plays, 75 yards, 8 minutes, takes a touchdown lead. Air Force comes back. They fumble and recover at the Army at their own 17. They face a 4th-and-1 at the 26, their own 26. They go for it. They get stuffed. Air Force takes over, marches the 26 yards, ties it up 17-17. And you're thinking, okay, this is going to overtime. They're not going to do anything. Well, somehow, some way, Helms hits Anderson for 42 yards to get all the way down to the Air Force 12. A couple of plays to run out the clock. 27-yard field goal. Army pulls it off 20-17. The importance of that game, that means Army-Navy is also for the Commander-in-Chief trophy, which just adds a little something more to the game.
The funny thing on the 4th-and-1 play, Kev, is he had the hole. And yeah, the guy just stuck his hand out at the end and just tripped him up maybe about a quarter of a yard short.
I mean, he was real close.
But Helms had it. And yeah, I couldn't believe they went for it, but I thought he was going to get it. Anyway, story for another day. Kev, you have a few gems to go over, no?
Yep. So we're talking about Miami and their struggles here lately. After November 1st, under Mario Cristobal, Miami's 4-11. I don't know if you realize that they fall apart late under Cristobal.
I did not realize that.
Two long conference losing streaks ended. Florida State gets their first conference win since September of last year when they beat Wake. Mississippi State breaks a 16-game losing streak. They beat Arkansas 38-35. Their last win in conference in 2023 was against?
Arkansas. And Arkansas's last win was against Mississippi State.
There you go.
In 24. They should just schedule each other so somebody gets a win every year.
There you go. Duke's Darian Menza, the quarterback. Mm-hmm. 2,500 yards this year, 21 touchdowns, only 2 interceptions in 8 games. The last quarterback to be at those numbers through their team's first 8 games? Some guy from BYU named Zach Wilson.
He was a great pro.
Wow.
So good numbers, but bad comparison.
Absolutely.
In the NFL, Gino, this is up your alley. Green Bay this year is the only team to lose 2 games in which they were more than touchdown favorites. They lost week 3 to Cleveland, and of course this weekend, 14.5 point underdog favorites, or 13.5, I should say.
Yeah,
and they beat Carolina. Arizona, 3-10 on Monday Night Football in the career, in their history. All 3 wins are against Dallas.
And if you remember Rod Tidwell's big catch, too. Even yes, in fictional, they won a big game against Dallas.
And I'm going to give you a bonus. Champions League soccer.
Uh-oh.
Now Gino's in.
Bayern Munich, Luis Diaz. Terrific player. He had 2 goals in the first half, then gets the red card. The first player ever in Champions League history with 2 goals and a red card in the first half.
That's awesome.
And those are my hidden gems for this
week.
Nice job.
All right, cool.
All right, Darren, we're going to go around the world of sports. We got a couple of things we're going to not talk about.
Yeah, Breeders' Cup. We had the classic, and it was a classic.
Oh,
listen, despite Sovereignty not running, great field. And what we learned in this race was that the 4-year-olds were better than the 3-year-olds that ran. Forever Young is the winner. Okay, he finally gets Sierra Leone, who came flying down the stretch from the back of the pack. Sierra Leone, if you don't know, is a horse that makes one move. He's not one that's going to be – he's way off the pace, and he's going to come flying. Forever Young, what the genius of the ride was, they had the little rabbit out there. He kept Fierceness boxed in. So Fierceness had nowhere to go.
Yep.
And when it was time to make the move, Fierceness had to get around the tired horse. And Forever Young took the move and started going. Suddenly, you see Mind Frame. You see journalism showing their faces. They're coming right there. Sierra Leone's coming from flying from the back of the pack. Fierceness trying to get around on the inside. But great, great win for Japan, just like in the World Series. You know, we get an amazing win for Forever Young, who had always been a bridesmaid in the United States, and now is the bride, champion of the Breeders' Cup Classic. Kev, great race.
Yeah. One of the best rides by a jockey I've ever seen by Sakai. I mean, absolutely. Like you said, Darren, he captured it perfectly. They kept Fierceness. Fierceness got hurt by having the one post and just was trapped on the rail the whole way around behind the rabbit, who wound up, you know, tiring late, like you said. And just the effort to try to get around contrary thinking.
Yep.
Just gave Fierceness no chance. I mean, the fact that he was able to hang on, stay for third, shows that he was still a terrific horse. It would have been interesting if he'd been able to get out, and Sierra Leone had that huge move. If it's a little bit further of a race, he probably catches him. But Forever Young, great, great ride, and terrific job in him to win. And like you said, Dan, one of the best classics, you know, in a long time.
The field was great. The race was great.
It lived up to the hype beforehand. We wanted a great race. It turned out to be a great race.
Listen, and Sierra Leone was right there, had a shot. Go if the race is another, I don't know, 20 yards, yeah. Sierra Leone probably wins it. But yeah. Great win for Forever Young. Now we've had 42 classics. 14 three-year-olds have won it. 28, four and above have won it. So the older horses generally have a feel in our head. Kev, G?
Exacta paid 29.80, by the way.
Yeah, no, listen.
Not a bad payout.
7-2 on top of 7-2 on top of 3-1.
Yeah.
And that's how the triple went. So they were the three favorites, yeah. Not in order by any stretch. Yeah.
Right.
Trifecta paid a little over $65.
Yeah. Same three horses as last year, just a different order.
Different order. Yep. No, great race. Yeah, last year the second place horse won it. The third place horse finished second, and the winner finished third. So just a little bit different.
We won't get it next year. Fierceness and Sierra Leone are both retiring to stud.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? They gave us an extra year, and I was happy with that.
Yep. You want to see these three-year-olds race at least to the four.
Yeah, it just makes it more fun.
Yep.
Just a couple baseball moves that happened. So a couple guys filed for their free agency. So Diaz, who I think is a must sign for the Mets, probably the biggest must sign that they have, along with Alonso. And for the Yankees, we saw Bellinger. Biggest surprise to me was Imanaga. I didn't expect him to opt out like he did. So now the Cub pitcher is a free agent. I think it's someone I didn't expect to see, along with Tucker. You obviously have Schwarber. Bichette is out there now. Bieber resigns, so he stays. Michael King is out there. Suarez is out there. Giolito's out there. Bregman's out there. It's going to be a pretty wild free agency, guys.
Yep.
Darvish out for the year in San Diego, UCL surgery.
Yeah.
You guys have anything else you want to touch on?
No. Hockey, Matthew Schaefer still looking like the real deal. Two goals the other night, the youngest defenseman ever with two goals. Broke the record that was held by some guy named Bobby Orr.
Yep. And then, of course, Ovechkin scores his 900th goal tonight. First player ever to do that.
Wow. Yep.
And, you know, the Rangers can't win or score at home. We'll get more at the hockey as we go, G.
All right. We're ready for NFL picks. Well, anything else before we get there?
I just want to give you guys a couple of hidden treasures, but you had something else, Kevin?
I was just going to say NBA, the Knicks are treading water right now. I think Mike Brown's still trying to get used to the roster, get used to the rotation. Compared to the last 2 years with Tibbs, at least he's playing 9 guys, 10 guys, you know. But let's see what he can figure out with the rotation. And unfortunately, local to us, the Brooklyn Nets are still the only winless team in the NBA.
They won tonight.
Well, they did bring
Indiana. So I believe that they won tonight, if I'm not mistaken. So 112-103. Then that's covered in one. So now there are no winless teams.
There's
one undefeated team, and that would be the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yep.
All right, buried treasures. Just a few things to go. We'll start with an NBA one since we just brought it up. Orlando Magic center Orlando Robinson. He's the first player in NBA history with both of his names on his jersey. Orlando's on the front, Robinson's on the back. Okay. Horse racing. Flavien Prat had an amazing weekend, okay? On Sunday at Aqueduct. He had 10 mounts. He won 7 of them, finished 2nd in the other 3.
Wow.
Yet that's not the most wins ever in a day. On October 31st, 1987, Gino, I know you were there.
Aqueduct. Oh, I was there.
Chris Antley won 9 races across 2 tracks. He won 4 at Aqueduct and 5 at the Meadowlands that night. So he won 9 that day, but not the same track.
Wow.
College football, quick point. Only 3 teams this season have allowed 24 points or less in every game. The number 1 team, Ohio State. The number 2 team, Indiana. And one of these things is not like the other. Auburn, who's 4-5.
Wow.
David Ortiz, if we're going to go into Major League Baseball for a second, had a career on-base percentage of .380. Very good. If you took all 762 home runs by Barry Bonds and made them out, his on-base percentage is .384. I just think that's an amazing stat. I didn't know that at all. I was like, wow, that one blew me away. Quick thing about the Iron Bowl, one of the classic Auburn versus Alabama matchups where we had that guy Updike, you know, poison the tumor trees. That's how sick these people are. This will be the 7th straight year where we have a unique coaching matchup. Okay, in 19, it was Saban against Malzahn. In 20, it was Sarkisian against Malzahn. 21, it was Saban against – he coached for the game. Saban wasn't on the sideline. 21, Saban against Harrison. 22, Saban against Cadillac. 23, Saban against Freeze. 24, DeBoer against Freeze. 25, DeBoer against Durkin. 7 straight years of this rivalry where we don't have the same coaches back-to-back.
Wow.
Only 3 pitchers in history have won 3 Cy Young Awards and 3 World Series. Sandy Koufax, Jim Palmer,
and Clayton Kershaw. Just did, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. And then the last one I'm going to give you because I think it's the most interesting, okay? I'm going to go to the world of hockey because Gino loves it when I do this. On April 11, 1975, the New England Whalers and the Minnesota Fighting Saints played in the Hartford Civic Center for in a WHA first-round playoff game. Early in the 2nd period, a melee ensues like did in hockey in 1975. Both benches cleared and emptied. They dropped the gloves, not unusual at the time. Fights were in the benches. Fights were in the penalty boxes. It was ridiculous. 2 teams combined for 41 penalties and 217 penalty minutes, a WHA record. Then both teams boarded the same charter flight and flew to Minnesota. And those are my buried treasures. I was blown away to hear that they were on the same flight afterwards. That must have been one hell of a flight. All right, Gino, lead us.
All right. 9 weeks in the books, NFL week 10. Through those weeks, Kevin is at 13-14. Darren, 14-13. Gino at 16-11. I've caught fire all of a sudden. I've hit 7 of my last 9. I have the T-box. I am starting with the Buffalo Bills in Miami. I think Miami has problems all over the place. Buffalo minus 9.5 is my first pick. Darren?
You know what? It's a tough game. I'm going to take Minnesota plus 4.5 against Baltimore. I just think that spread's too high on the road. I wouldn't be surprised if Baltimore won it, but I'm going to take I think it's a field goal game. I'm going to take the Vikings.
Kev?
Jaguars at the Texans. I know the Texans' defense is tough, but no C.J. Stroud, and it's 1.5 I've got, so I'm taking Jacksonville laying 1.5 at the Texans.
Okay. My second game, and I keep betting against them, Darren, and I keep winning. I'm taking Chicago minus a 3.5 against the Giants. Listen, they're just trying to tread water right now. Offense is lacking. Give me Chicago. I think they play spirited football after last week's craziness. Give me Chicago minus a 3.5.
I'm taking the Bucs laying 2.5 against the Patriots. I just think they're better, and I think they win that game. I think they'll win by a touchdown at home. I'm taking Tampa Bay.
Kev?
I've picked against them a couple times now because they're just a putrid team. Chalk showing nothing. Panthers minus 5.5. I think they win this one by double digits easy.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's a good pick. All right. My third one, Darren, I'm all over him. I'm still all over him. Give me Seattle at home minus the 6.5 against the Cardinals.
I've never done anything you've liked this much rather than pick Seattle to be really good this year.
Listen, you know what, Darren? I watched them a little bit. Their O-line is good. Their D-line is good. And it shows the way that the rest of the team plays. You could tell. It doesn't matter if Ken Walker's in there or Charbonnet's in it. It doesn't matter. They give Darnold plenty of time to throw the ball. Jackson Smith and the Jigba's been great. Last week, they went to Horton. They went to all these other guys last week. He connected with 4 touchdowns, and it was all different players. Give me Seattle minus the points.
I'm going to take Detroit minus 8 at Washington. Sorry, Gino. I just think that Detroit's going to bounce back in this one. And unfortunately, my problem is that Detroit usually doesn't play well in Washington. But I don't think this is a typical Washington team right now. I just think Louvoo is getting suspended. I heard all this stuff going on. I'm going to take Detroit laying the 8.
It's actually 7.5 at this point.
I'll win 31-23 and be happy. All right, fine.
Kev?
I like the Bears. I like the Lions.
I like Carolina. So there you go.
good. At least I got one of yours. I like 2 road teams. Both are dogs. The big matchups this week. Give me the Eagles plus 2.5 of the Packers. I think Green Bay's gonna bounce back a little bit, but the Eagles seem like they might be turning their season around here. It just feels like they've got that edge back, and I think this is their chance to start to take off a little bit. Maybe even get home field. I mean, that's still very much in play. Give me the Eagles plus 2.5 at Green Bay.
I love that, Kev. In fact, I love the Sunday night, Monday night. It may be a Sunday night, Monday night underdog parlay for Gino in Pittsburgh, Philly.
I like the Steelers plus the 3.5 at the Chargers, and I think mostly because of the offensive line issues with the Chargers.
It's a very concerning game, which keeps me away from it because I feel like the Chargers are better, but they have no line.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just one of those things. Boys, anything else before we wrap up?
Nope. This is
a little longer than we expected show as we went a little too deep in college.
Wrap it up.
We are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren here with Kevin here with Gino talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world where a 1-7 team has given me hope and excitement. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. We post a lot on social. We're posting almost nightly. Please like it. If you don't like it, pretend you like it. Share it. Tell other people about us. Be part of the show. Do more. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.